size of the stack. Sorry, so can I erase this?
I guess I erase that.
Okay. So typically you're interested, so the question is, what can you say about A if A times A is, let's say, the size of A times A is, let's say, less than 10 times the size of A.
So
this is basically one of the goals of this course, would be to try to describe such sets in the various groups. So, so I'll give you an example, just to begin with. So that's essentially, it's an exercise. So suppose that A times A is less or equal than K times A, where K is strictly less than 3 halves.
So the set of products is at most 3 halves of the set of the group.
Then A is contained in one coset
of a finite subgroup.
Contained in a, in fact, a normalizing coset. Coset of a finite subgroup.
So, of course, if A is equal to a finite subgroup, H, then A times A is equal to H. Okay, so it's the same.
So it's A times A, same as A.
But suppose it's equal to a normalizing coset. So it's A times H where AH equals HA. Then A times A is just A squared H. So again, it's the same number of elements. Okay. So this says that just given this condition of the number of elements, the conclusion is you find a group. And you find a subgroup.
Which is a group B?
Yes.
So in fact, H is not too big. H is less or equal than K times A.
And it's easy to see, as I just proved it, that it's if and only if.
Okay, so that's an exercise to occupy yourself with for the next hour. But it's really representative of the theme of this course, because you will see that the statements I will be after will look like this. I will start with a condition like this. I will deduce that A must have some structure. And typically, I will show that there is some subgroup inside. Or if it's not a subgroup, it may be something different, which I will try to describe. So, okay. Okay, so let's just one remark. This 3 halves here is sharp. Take A to be just 0, 1 inside the integers, then of course A times A is 0, 1, and 2, which is 3 times, which has 3 elements. Okay. And here there is no subgroup, no finite subgroup. So this problem has been looked at very much in the abelian situation by many people for several decades already. But it's only fairly recently that people in group theory, now where non-commutative groups are most relevant, have been looking at this type of question. So, and I guess one of the first people to really study the non-commutative case is Derrida. And he realized that many of the properties that had been developed in the study of such sets in the abelian context, in fact, hold in more generally for an arbitrary group. And studying this problem, he was led to the following definition, which is the definition of an approximate group, and which is really the right definition because both the concept is the right concept and also the word is the good choice. So I'll define what is an approximate group. So you start with a group G. So this is G is an abelian group. And you take K. K would be a parameter. So K is bigger than 1. Parameter. And you say that A, a finite subset A in G, is called a K approximate subgroup. But G is exist a subset X in G of size at most K such that A times A is contained in X times A, and we're also going to require that the set A contains the identity and is stable under inverse. So this is the definition. So just note that here this definition is not symmetric because I put X on the left side. But of course, if you take the inverses, you get that AA contains the AX inverse. Okay, so up to enlarging X and taking the set of inverses, then saying this is the same as saying that. So just a few remarks on this definition. So maybe a few examples before I go further. So first example is, of course, when the parameter k is 1. Well, then if k is 1, then you see A times A is contained in one coset of A. But because A contains the identity, it actually implies that A times A is contained in A, so it's a subgroup. So one approximate subgroup are the same thing as subgroups, finite subgroups. Okay. Give you another example. Suppose H is a finite subgroup. And suppose I remove from H a few elements. Well, then it's still going to be an approximate group. So in fact, if you remove, take A to be defined as H minus a subset Y, let's say, where Y is, let's say, less than square root of H, then A is going to be a two approximate group. So you suppose you remove a symmetric subset. Okay, that's easy to check. Of approximate groups that are not groups, are arithmetic progressions. So C, an interval, suppose A inside Z is defined by the interval minus n. So what happens if I take, so it's symmetric, contains zero, if I take a plus a, then this is just minus 2n, 2n. So you see it's covered, if this is zero minus n, if I look at 2n, 2n, then clearly it's covered by two pieces, by two translates of my set. There's a minus n is a plus n. So this is a two fraction group. So I let you think what could be something that is not a two fraction group but is still maybe a three fraction. Okay, so I'll tell you about this later. So maybe I'll keep this definition. So one thing you have to the first thing you realize when you see this definition is that really it has the right name. So it's not a group, but it's close to be a group. The reason is it's close to be stable under metrification. So if A is a k-approximate group. You see that this implies that if you multiply A by itself several times, so instead of just taking A times A, you look at A times A times A several times, then you can just iterate this. And you get into, so if you do it k times, you get into x to the k minus 1 times A. So in particular, so I'm going to write this set. I'm going to write it a to the power k, the kth fold product. So in particular, you see that the size of a to the power k is at most k times to the power of k minus 1, k to the power k minus 1. The size of x to the power of k minus 1 is obviously bounded by this, times the size of it. So this means that again, it means that the set A does not grow very much under multiplication by a parameter that is controlled in terms of this k.
So so that's an obvious observation, of course. But the reason why approximate groups were introduced is because the converse is true to some. So if you have a set A and you suppose it does not grow very much, then you can build an approximate group out of it. So this is the content of the following proposition. So, so this proposition says that if you take if A is any subset of G, so G is an ambient group, and you suppose that A times A times A, so you need three times, is at most K times A, for some parameter K. Then the conclusion, so it's first, the remarkable thing is that this condition alone implies this condition here. So this is a stable phenomenon. So it's enough to say that the product of three copies of A is not much bigger than A, to imply that the product of n copies of A is not much bigger than A. So then, A to the n is at most so here I guess it's 2n minus 2 for every n bigger than 2. And the next thing is that if you take A to be, if you take B to be A union, you add the indices and you add the identity. And so that's not enough to get an approximate root, but if you square it, it's going to be enough. So this thing is a CK to the C approximate root, where C is an absolute constant. So here C is some absolute constant. I don't know what's the best one, but I think here if you take 15 it's okay, and here maybe a bigger one. Okay. Okay, so this proposition is the reason why approximate groups are so interesting. You see, because as soon as you have this condition, then immediately by taking the square of A, you get an approximate group. And once you have an approximate group, things it's easy to control the products, right? Because of this law. Okay. Right. So. So maybe one remark is in order. So here I took two. So two is not enough. Taking the product of A times A less or equal to K times A does not imply that A to the N is less than K to something, some constant, even depending on N and K. So I'll give you an example. So take H, a large finite group, finite subgroup of D. Well, suppose there is such. And take A in G, an element which does not normalize H, but really does not normalize at all, so it changes, so it conjugates H to a group with trivial intersection with H. So take A such that H intersected with A, H inverse is trivial. But then, if you define A to be H union this element A, so think of H being very large, and A is just one other element, then what is the product set? So what's the product set? A times A. Well, I can multiply H by itself and stay in H, I can multiply by A, or I can multiply A twice. So it's just H times union the coset, left coset, the right coset, and A squared. Okay, so the size of A times A is like at most three times the size of A. So three times H plus one. So it's a three approximate group. Okay. Well, it's not approximate group, but it has A times A is less than three times A. Okay. However, if you take it three times, then you see that inside the threefold product,
to find this bad guy H and the H. And because of this condition that A is not normalized H, or sends H transversely to itself, then the sign of H in an H is actually the sign of H squared. So this implies the size of A is like is at least the size of H squared. So typically it's much larger than the size of A. Okay, so this gives you a simple example to show that even though A times A can be at most 3 times A, A times A times A here will be of comparable in size to the size of A squared, which is much bigger than 3 times A. Okay, so, well, this example says it fails, but maybe the really surprising thing is that it's enough to ask for 3. If you have 3, the threefold product is less than 3 times A, then the nth fold product works as well. It's also less than, maybe not 3, but 3 to the 2n. Okay. So I'll try to give you a proof, at least of the first thing. So let me try to give a proof of this proposition. So this follows from what's called what we started to call the Ruja calculus, because Imre Ruja was like developed the right set of tools to handle these problems, these questions, mostly in the abelian context, but then Tao recast it in non-abelian context, and basically with a similar argument, we have the same set of tools. So basically, these two tools are first, so two key tools. So first, you have the Ruja triangle inequality. And the second tool is the so-called Ruja covering lemma. Okay. So, okay, so what is this? So Ruja found the following, which I find really surprising definition. So he defined the following distance. The definition, we have the Ruja distance. It's not exactly a distance, but we'll see. So if you have two sets A and B, you include D, two finite sets. Then you can define the following distance to be the log of the size of
A times B inverse divided by the square root, the size of A. So by size, I mean just the number of elements, right? Times the size of B. Okay, so let's look at this quantity. So this quantity is non-negative, right? Because A B inverse is bigger than the maximum of A and B. It's a group, right? So A B, there's no constellation, right? So in a ring, this would not be true if we had zero divisors. But it's a group, so A B inverse is bigger than this, so this is bigger than the square root of A times B. Okay. So we have this. And the Rousseau triangle inequality says that we have a triangle inequality. So every A, B, and C in G, the distance between A, B is less or equal to the distance between A, C plus the distance between C, B. So it's like a metric space. Not quite, because there is a case when the distance between A and B is zero, but we can completely characterize this. So, this and the distance between A and B is zero if and only if A and B are the same, A and B are cosets of the same finite subgroup. Okay. So there is also some invariance, immediate invariance that you can see. So you can multiply by any element on the left and any element. If I translate A on the left by anything and B on the right by anything, I get the same number. Or if I translate on the right, this time by the same element, then I get the same number. So let me prove you this point. Okay. So it's purely combinatorial. It's purely combinatorial proof statement. Triangle inequality.
Oh.
Okay. Triangle inequality. So first you realize that this triangle inequality is equivalent to saying that C times AB inverse is at most AC inverse times CB inverse. So that's just working the logs. Obvious? So then, why is this? So that's because you look at this map. So for every x in, let's say, AB inverse, you pick an A sub x in A and B sub x in B such that x is equal to ax bx inverse. Okay, so you pick your representatives of this expression with x of product of an element of b times the inverse of an element of a times the inverse of an element of b, and you look at the map from c cross a inverse to a c inverse cross c inverse that sends c and x to AX C inverse C BX. Look at this map. So I claim this map is injective. Okay. That's here. So this map is injective. Okay, and that does it. Okay, so you see, it's really simple. It's nothing. The equality case, I leave this to you as an exercise. It's only using the fact that if you have a subset of a group which is stable under multiplication, then it is actually a subgroup. So with this triangle inequality, I can prove this proposition. The main statement here, that h of n is less than k to the n minus 2 times a. So let me do that. For the first point of the proposition. So you have A and B here, and I pull A.
Wait, your map is not even well defined.
It is, so I picked representatives. Okay. So the map depends on this choice of representatives. Okay. So you see,
I'm picking AX and BX.
So let me show you this. So just look at this, the distance between a to the n minus 1. So I'm going to prove it by induction on n. So what is this? So this is the Hoosier distance between a to the n minus 1 and a to the minus 2. So what is it? It's the log of a to the n plus 1 divided by the square root of a to the n minus 1 times a squared. So I apply the Hoosier triangle inequality twice. I do it here once, a to the n minus 1, a to the a inverse plus the distance between a inverse and a plus the distance between a and a minus 2. Okay, so I just applied it twice, this triangle inequality. And when I rewrite this, what this means is that it's a sum of logs, so it becomes the log of the product. And when I do this, what do I get in the end? I get this is less or equal to a to the n divided by square root of a to the n minus 1 a times a inverse times a inverse, so a minus 2 divided by square root of a inverse times square root times a times here it's a cube over square root of a times a minus. So the denominators cancel a little bit, and in the end you get that a to the n minus n plus 1 divided by a is at most a to the n divided by a times a squared divided by a times a cubed divided by a. Okay. Okay. And this is less than k by definition, so it's going to be less than k squared a to the n divided by a.
that's it. Okay, and you induct on F. So I just proved this to you because I wanted to show you that things are what I'm saying here is really basic, really simple. There's really no sophisticated mathematics, except that you need to come up with the right definition and the right tool. Okay. So,
in part, can you just say what is the group which makes it an approximate without proof?
Part B?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I'm going to essentially give you the proof. So, part A follows from the first key tool, the Ruja distance. Part B follows from the second key tool, which is the Ruja covering lemma. So, the Ruja covering lemma. So it says this, if you have two sets A and B in G, and you suppose that A times B is at most K times A, then B is contained inside finitely many, so boundedly many cosets of A inverse A. So I need to think. The proof is very simple, so every time I need to read the proof before I can find the statement. But so we can do this proof. So the proof is this: you look at the maximal subset. So you look at a set of disjoint translates of A. So you look at A times B1 and so on, A times B, B, Bn, let's say. Suppose it's a maximal subset. So AB will contain this union of ABIs. Okay. So in particular, N here is at most K, because AB is less than K times A. And I have N copies, any things that have size A in our disjoint. So N is less than K. But it's a maximal thing, so if I take any other one, if I take AB, any other AB for any B in B, then this AB must intersect one of those things. So AB must intersect one of the BIs for some I. So this implies that B, so there exists some A1 and A2, such that A1B is A2BI, so then it implies that B is contained in A inverse ABI. Okay, so now I know the statement. I have to translate on the left. All right. Okay, so this implies if I take X to be this set B1 up to Bn, okay, X is a subset B for some subset B. X in B outside of most K. So this is the Ruja property. If AB is at most K times A, then B is contained into a bounded number of right cosets of A inverse A. So typically, so this is true for every set, okay? But when we will consider approximate groups, So I insist on this. So proximal groups have the right name because they, although they are not groups, they behave very much like groups. And you can try to, whenever you have a statement in group theory, you can try to prove it for proximal groups and see what's the discrepancy, what's the difference. And the surprising thing is that we can do a lot just using this hypothesis of proximal groups without you really using that it's a group. Okay? So when you have an approximate group, then here this A plus A will be essentially A. Could be in fact containing finitely many or boundedly many cosets of A. So for our purposes, when you have an approximate group, taking a bounded power of it is not going to change it much. Okay. So that's the basic idea. Okay. So let me explain. Let me try to support this claim I just made that proximal groups are very much like groups by writing another set of properties. For instance, you have the following: if A and B are approximate groups, so when I say approximate groups, I mean there are k approximate groups for some k. Okay. In fact, suppose A, there are k approximate groups, both of them. Then, if you take the inverse, so if you take the intersection, it's not true that the intersection themselves will be approximate groups, but if you take A squared, then it will be. This will be an approximate group. So this is a k. I guess you need to take the six approximate group. So you see, in this world, you have a parameter k all the time. And as soon as you change a little bit, this parameter k changes. So if you take a few powers of a, this parameter k changes a bit. But it changes only by maybe a power of itself. And a bounded power, if you take a bounded number of products or a bounded population. So we have this. The same is true if you take any subgroup. It is any really real subgroup. In particular, not necessarily finite, infinite subgroup. And then an A approximate subgroup. Then A squared. So here again, you need to square it. Somehow, part of this philosophy also is that when you have a set A, looking at the product set is smoothing things out. So it makes the set much nicer looking. If you do this. For instance, take the circle, take Z mod nZ, and pick in Z mod nZ a random subset. So typically, there's going to be half of it. But if you take the product set A times A, then with overwhelming probability, this will be the entire Z mod nZ. So it's sort of, although the set A is weird, it's a random subset, when you take the square of it, it's suddenly a nice group. And what I said is true not only for Z mod nZ, but also for every finite subgroup. So here again, if I have h n subgroup, then I square it, still it becomes a k, so k to the 4 here across the group. The first property is completely obvious. So the first two are not obvious just from scratch, but they follow from similar arguments using Ruja covering and the triangle inequality But the third one is obvious, is that if you take any group homomorphism from the engine group to another engine group, any group homomorphism, then the image is again in a Broughton group. Is a K Broughton group with the same K. Right, because I remind you that the definition is that A times A contains A times A, so if you just apply pi, you get that. You get this, okay? And the symmetry is developed, so it's okay, so now what happens for group action? Well, it turns out that again, for group actions, we can say things that are essentially saying that an approximate group looks very much like a group. So I'm putting this property here because we will use it later on. So typically, we will, in the next lecture and the one after, we try to understand the rough classification, so the classification of approximate groups. It's still not a complete theorem, but there are many instances, many groups in which we can classify, we can say when a finite subset is a k-approximate group. So sometimes we have to use the geometry of the ambient group to solve this problem. And using the geometry of the ambient group means that we want to look at various actions of the ambient group on various spaces. Okay, so it's a key tool to understand. It's an important thing to understand what happens to approximate groups when the ambient group acts on a space. So suppose a G acts on a set X. Then you essentially have the same properties. So, for example, if you take for every x in X, you can H sub X is the stabilizer of X, and so I pick A the K approximate group subgroup of T. And I want to understand what is A times X. So the orbit, I'm going to call it the orbit even though A is not a group. Okay, so what's the size of this? Well, if it were a group, then it would be just the ratio between the size of A and the size of the intersection of A with the stabilizer. Here it's not a group, but nevertheless, we can say something of a similar, which is something that is similar looking. So the size of A times X times the size of A squared times H sub X is the in between K to the power 3 times A and bigger than. So that's one thing, so that could be crucial in some applications. But also we can say we have a partition into orbits. So if you take AY1, AY2, and so on, AYN, a disjoint family of suppose they are disjoint, and suppose that's a maximal subset. So suppose they are disjoint, and for every x in X, A dot X intersects one of those So suppose you have your set X, and you suppose you have a disjoint collection of A orbits, okay? But then taking A squared will cover the set. Then X will be equal to the union of A squared times A times the Y. And this will be, it's not exactly a partition, okay, but this will be a cover with bounded multiplicity. A cover with multiplicity. Bounded by k to the 5. Okay. Okay, so I'll stop here for the basic property. But this just gives you a feeling of what we can say, and I hope I convince you that approximate groups are sufficiently close to groups that we can apply group theory methods to understand them. Okay, so let's see. So a little bit of time maybe to discuss the theorem. So it's actually a theorem that started the whole subject. So this is the famous sum product inequality, sum product phenomenon. So this has to do with not approximate groups per se, but with approximate fields. So I define approximate groups. You can try to define what an approximate ring, an approximate field. So the idea would be, instead of asking that A times A is contained, or it's not much bigger than A, you ask the same thing, but not just for the product, but for the product and the multiplication and addition. But that turns out not to be exactly enough. So you need to take a few iterations of addition and multiplication. So let me say that that subset A lets F be a field, and lets A be a subset of F. Say it's a k-approximate field. So that's a definition. If A plus A is contained in the intersection of a white additive coset of A and a multiplicative coset of A, where X star is X minus 0. Okay, so I take A times A plus A because it's the minimal expression for which we can show something. But basically here you could take another expression like a cubed plus a cubed, or a squared plus a squared, or a squared plus a squared divided by a squared plus a squared, this would work. Okay. So let me define, for this, let me define D of A to be the set of elements in the field that can be written as a sum of at most D terms, where each term is a product of at most d element from A. Okay. So this will be A to the D plus, so plus minus, okay. Plus minus A to the D, plus minus, and so on. So when you are given a field, and you know, you're given generators, that's what you can see after these steps, right? The d possible operation. And I'm also allowing ratio exceptions. Okay? Well, for any reasonable definition of an approximate field, what you want is that if A is an approximate field, then arg D of A is not much bigger than A for every D. With a parameter that is controlled in terms of D. Okay. So it turns out that for fields, the theory is much easier, so it's less interesting than for groups. not saying that fields theory is less interesting than group theory, but at least approximate fields are less interesting than approximate groups for the following reason. So, theorem, there are no non-trivial approximate fields. So what does it mean? So it means that, in other words, if A is a K approximate field, then either A is bounded in terms of K, so it's at most K to the C, so C here is an absolute constant, so to say there exists some C, which does not depend even on F, does not depend on the ambient field. Either this or the field generated by A is at most K to the C times A. That's the subfield generated by A. So typically, if you take your favorite field, take a subset inside, and suppose it does not grow very much when you multiply a few times and add a few times, then, well, either you start with a really small set, or you started with almost all of a finite subfield. No, independent, that's absolute constant. Okay, and the proof is actually really simple, really not hard. So, yeah, I'll postpone it to the next talk. I hope I didn't discourage you. I'm going to give connections with geometric group theory in the next couple lectures. So,
I have a question. If there are notions with probabilities instead of subsets, like probabilities,
like a random subset.
Yes, random subset. Finite subset is uniformly. The uniform probability on a finite subset.
So you would define.
What's the question?
Yeah, you would
the
define.
The notion where the finite subset is replaced by a finite probability.
Yeah, I guess yes. So if there's no, nothing has really been written about it, but I guess you could define an approximate measure as a measure mu for which mu convolved with itself is. Not much bigger, or it's comparable to mu. Yes. So this, yes. And this has not been formalized, but it's been used.
And my other question was, what were the motivations of these people in the abelian case?
Additive number theory. It's a big subject. You know, semi-Rady theorem, the understanding of arithmetic progressions, patterns in primes. So. For Z. So, this will be the next theorem. So this is an old theorem, it's called Feynman theorem. And so it's not the same conclusion, but it gives a classification of approximate subgroups of Z.
Other questions? Okay, we have half an hour break. Thank you.